According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, youth offenders tried and detained in the adult criminal justice system are at a higher risk for criminal activity later in life than youths who go through the juvenile justice system. We're going to talk about that and just talk about youth and crimes and crime rates and what we can do to help those who have committed crimes. Ken Strait, our guest. Ken, associate professor in the UW-Madison Law School, and I'm pleased to have him back. He comes by. It's been quite a while.
It has been.
It's been too long. Anyway, I'm glad to have him with us today, and if you have some questions, I hope you'll join in. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. As you look at the findings from the American Journal of Preventive Medicine about the fact that youth who go through the juvenile justice system are less likely to have new crimes, does that surprise you?
Well, you know, the thing that was interesting about this sort of comes in, there's the Center for Disease Control plans a programs to try to improve outcomes in the community. And so in addition to reducing violence and reducing health problems and things like that, so that this is sort of not really originating from a corrections-based kind of evaluation. Instead, mm-hmm. It was basically how to make our communities better and safer. So what they then did is they looked at the Association for Preventative Medicine, and then the Association for Preventative Medicine looked through dozens of different evaluations that had been done as far as the transfer of kids from juvenile to the adult system. And I think what's important to look at here is that at the end, they really only found six that met the rigorous scientific studies. So instead of this being, let's say, something where a newspaper reporter says how many kids that were transferred to the adult system in Wisconsin got recidivated, and you'd say, well, duh, you know, the very fact that they got transferred would tend to indicate that they were at higher risk. These studies were carefully matched. And they did it in a variety of ways. In some cases, in a Florida case study, they actually did match them. And they always made sure that from an objective perspective, the level of the crime, the criminal history of the kid, the ages and all that, the one that was not transferred matched up with the one who was transferred, had a more serious score than the other one. So okay. For a variety of reasons, the one didn't get transferred and the one did, but they matched them up. In another study, they did a thing out in New York State. Wisconsin's age of reaching adult jurisdiction is 17th birthday. Right. In New York State, it's 16th birthday. But you go across the river to northern New Jersey, where you can sort of match up counties to a New York City kind of population.
Right.
And there the age is the 18th birthday. So what they did there was instead of trying to match within the jurisdiction, they looked at kids who had similar types of offenses. But in New Jersey, they would be kept in the juvenile system. In New York, they were automatically in the adult system. So
gotcha.
Those weren't judicial transfers. Those were just because of the way that it worked. The study in Washington State was a study where they looked at Washington State passed a law in the mid-1990s, which legislatively, and by legislatively, took away the jurisdiction of juvenile court for certain types of offenses.
Mm-hmm.
So normally, when we think of waiver, we think of a judge making a case-by-case decision. Here it was a situation where for eight serious type of offenses, and then they matched up the rate of arrest in Washington State with comparable states after that period of time. And they found that, in fact, for that age population, it made no difference at all compared to the places where they had kept the other one. So these were a variety of different approaches, but none of them were the ones where you would just say, you know, five guys sitting around the bar yeah. could all pick out the one out of 10 guys that you would think is ready to go to the adult system. It was a much more careful study than that. What they found was that of the six studies, four clearly showed that the people who went into the adult system, and by the adult system, I don't necessarily mean they went to adult prison. This could be yeah. adult probation as well. Four of the six studies said that recidivism was greater by those who went into the adult system. And, okay. and the measuring time tended to be about 2 years on the streets. So if they had initially gone to prison, they would wait until they got out of prison and then measure them for 2 years mm-hmm. in the juvenile system. One showed no effect at all. And one said, well, for property offenders who went to the adult system earlier rather than staying in the juvenile system, there was actually a reduction in recidivism. Mm-hmm. But for kids who had gone into the adult system for violent offenses, there was an increase in recidivism. I think what's remarkable about this is that it is totally counterintuitive to what you and I would, if we were having a couple of linies and thinking yeah. about what should we do to make the community safer? You know, it's pretty common that you would just say, well, let's get tougher on kids. Let's yeah. drop the age. And so to actually go out and do research that then says, you know, that didn't work out the way we thought. Now, from a political perspective, it is still oftentimes, if you say in general, should we get tougher on kids? They would say that. Then if you say, should you get tougher on your kid? They'd say, yeah, but let the juvenile system do it and not the adult system, that kind of thing. Wisconsin, unfortunately, went and lowered the age from 18th birthday to 17th birthday yeah. on a totally non-principled, non-evidence-based reason. It costs money to serve kids in the juvenile system. For the most part, the reason why I would guess kids got treated better or have lower recidivism if they stay in the juvenile system is that the caseloads are much better, the access to resources are much better. Oftentimes, the probation agent for a juvenile can insist that the kid go to school, which structures his day 5 days a week, a variety of things like that. Whereas putting a 17-year-old into adult probation caseloads, those adult probation agents have a lot of serious stuff to do, and a 17-year-old coming onto their caseload might not necessarily attract a whole lot of attention. So it sort of is ironic that we said, let's get tougher on them. But when you actually then look at and say, what did we actually do? Because most of the people stay in probation. They don't go to prison. Yeah. The probation resources that we have for a person in the juvenile system, and I'm talking about every county in the state, is far greater than what we have for an adult.
So it's a cost thing, but if you, I don't know, I'm just figuring in dollars and cents, if you take somebody into the juvenile system at 17 instead of the other, instead of the adult, and they're less likely to come back, I would think that the cost of dealing with somebody time more than once, twice, three times, yeah. or whatever, in the end is more costly than having the initial expense the first time around.
Yeah. You know, my observation of the Wisconsin legislature is that it's pretty good listening to the engineers from Department of Transportation and saying, if you don't fix this road now, it's going to cost you a whole bunch more in the next budget. So let's just hunker down and find the way to fix this road now. We tend not to do that as much for juvenile crime, partly because in the juvenile crime thing, a lot of dispositions for juveniles are a one-year disposition. Now, those could be extended depending on whether the kid's complying or in yeah. some cases, the judge can give a five-year disposition for severity of offenses and all that. But for the most part, we're just looking at it, year to year. And what really happened in the mid-1990s, when the Juvenile Justice Code was passed, it had been a long time since the counties had received an increase of state allocations to serve juvenile delinquents. And the counties were justifiably upset about getting stiff-armed. Now, one of the things that also happened was that there were justifiable questions as far as whether the formula was fair to large counties.
And I tell you what, we'll continue this conversation with our guest, Ken Strait, UW-Madison Law School Associate Professor, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about youths at risk of future crimes, now with UW-Madison Law School Associate Professor, Clinical Associate Professor Kenneth Strait. Ken's been with us a number of times over the years to talk about this area, and certainly we've got some interesting things to talk about today, especially with some research showing that youth offenders tried and detained in adult criminal justice system are at higher risk for criminal activity later in life than youths who go through the juvenile justice system. And Ken, you were saying that Wisconsin went to from 18 to 17 years old for adults to go into our youth to go into adult courts, and we're explaining some of the reasons why, and some of it had to do with kind of money and so forth.
Yeah, it was a strange time. For about 4 years in a row, the counties association had been noting that their increases in juveniles' costs were going up. And if you go back to the early 1990s, in fact, not just Wisconsin, but all over the nation, we were having an increase in juvenile offending, ranging from the most serious to the other things. For some reason, regardless of whether states change their laws or not, 94 was the peak, and it's been downhill ever since then. But the counties did have a good argument that says the allocation system doesn't help us because we have maybe a 30% increase in kids that we have to handle with the same amount of money. So part of the deal was the legislature said, we'll reduce the age to the 17th birthday so you don't have to spend it on as many. And if you look at Wisconsin, if you look at all arrests under the 18th birthday, those who are 17, almost in each and every category of offense, take up about 20 to 26% of the offenses. So it was like cutting, quarter of their responsibility, but they didn't cut the funds. And so anyway, you know, while it was marketed on a get tough on crime thing, what it really was a situation of sort of getting out of a bad budget cycle. Now, the fact is that we wind up paying for it over the long run, because the 17-year-olds are then in the adult system, and the adult system eventually absorbs them. So it's not like it didn't cost us anything. It just switched it from one budget to another.
We have callers online. By the way, you can join in if you have a question or comment at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Joyce in Bristol's online, so let's go to Joyce. Joyce, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. Thank you, Larry.
Sure.
I'm an adult probation and parole agent, and I work in a county where there's a juvenile state probation and parole agent.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see it, we've had a chance to discuss this at length, and the resources are limited for the adults. By the time if we get a non-assaulted misdemeanor juvenile, a 17-year-old person, an adult, and he is, or he or she, has a specific needs, like drug and alcohol needs or whatever needs they have, we are, within 1 month, according to our point system, how we supervise them, they're down to a minimum level of supervision, non-assaulted misdemeanors. That means we see them once every 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And we are, like your guest said, really more concerned with our assaultive offenders and supervising them at intense levels and high-risk levels and protecting the public with them. These juveniles that have educational needs or alcohol and drug needs just really do get slipped under the carpet. We don't have a time to mess with them. We don't have time to talk to the family. The families are all frustrated because legally we tell them their son's an adult or daughter's an adult, but they're still under their care.
Yeah.
Right. And in Wisconsin, the only thing that makes you an adult in Wisconsin is criminal court. For all other purposes, it's the 18th birthday. So when you otherwise are dealing with the health system, dealing with other things of parental control, children's court for child protective services, all 18th birthday, and then we have this 1 year gap for juvenile delinquents. And my guess would be that if you're an adult probation agent, the total amount of your day that you spent on dealing with schools and things that are specifically related to juveniles is 8%. You know, I mean, that's just a funny...
I'd say like 0 or 1%.
Or whatever. And so for you to figure out how to work with all the different systems down in your caseload, which are probably a number of different school districts and all that, yeah, as opposed to somebody who does this full time, it just doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't.
Joyce, I'm just going to offer, you know, Larry said, what would be a recommendation? Frankly, my recommendation would be, we do this for child support frequently when a family divorces and the non-custodial parent is responsible until the 18th birthday or the first day of the month after they graduate from high school. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking that really the juvenile system and high school are much more parallel to each other, and the tasks that the probation agent has to do would be much better paired if you had the system split like that rather than 17th birthday. My kid turned 17 in the fall of their junior year, and I love them very much, but I don't think they were quite adults yet.
Okay. Joyce, thanks a lot.
Oh, you're quite welcome. And the juvenile system is much better coped. They're already plugged into all the school systems, and they're much better with the parents than we are. You know, we say, he's an adult now. It's his responsibility, yada, yada, you know. And they're much more plugged into the family and the counseling and all that stuff.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks, right, Joyce. Thanks. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Well, John from Madison is online, so let's go to John next. John, hi to you.
Hi, Ken. John Ross.
Hi, John.
I've spent 34 years working in the juvenile justice system for the state, everything from being a parole officer to a social worker to administrator of the system, and have been retired for 7 years now, but that 17-year-old law is one of the two worst pieces of legislation that's ever been passed. And I'm sorry I missed most of the show. I'm just driving back from the barn having ridden a horse. But I heard the last call of the adult parole agent, and just echo those comments. I mean, it's a terrible piece of legislation. And I think, as Ken alluded to, it was kind of part of a perfect storm of the public feeling this was getting tough on juvenile delinquency, and the counties under pressure monetarily, seeing it as a way to cut their costs and allow them to spend their money on the front end of the system rather than the more serious delinquent kids. But it's been bad for the state, it's been bad for the kids involved, and it's really something that needs to be changed.
No. John, thanks. Can I comment?
A full disclosure, John and I worked together for about 10 years or so while he was administering juvenile corrections, and I was an analyst. And I just think most people, you know, your initial impulse when a kid doesn't obey is to lock him up, right? I mean, that's my initial impulse as well. But when you go to see what the strengths are of a juvenile correctional institution, let's assume the kid actually needs to go to an institution versus an adult program, and you're thinking, what tends to really change behavior? Well, it's relations that change behavior. Yeah. It's identifying you in the act of doing something right that changes behavior, because, frankly, some of the people don't know what's right, and they need constant coaching. And bless their hearts for those adults or those staff people in adult correctional institutions, but the staffing patterns simply don't allow you to have enough time to have those relationships. You're in different kind of posts, and you just simply can't do that. So, you know, I think what's important to think about for this age group, and the age group of the highest offending for violent offenses is 17, 18, 19, and in some cases, 20 years old. After that, it's a downhill slope for the most part. Now, there's some people who commit offenses there that I have absolutely no problem with being put into the adult system for a very long period of time. I meet them face-to-face when I do interviews at Green Bay Prison, and it's a tragedy that happened, but I don't see that those people should have stayed in the juvenile system.
Yeah, the issue is really discretion.
Right, and what we did was...
Some 17-year-olds and even 16-year-olds that belong in adult prison, but that has to be at the discretion of the judge. The automatic nature of it is what's tragic.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. If you went back to 18th birthday, you would still have all the discretion in the world, all the possibilities of waiving that kid to adult jurisdiction, depending on offense history, depending on severity of the crime. So it's not like you would be losing that resource, but what you would be getting is a chance for the juvenile system to work with the 10,000 kids who are 17-year-olds who are coming into the adult system right now and are going to have an adult record.
Yeah. John, thank you so much for calling
in.
Appreciate it very much. And we'll allow you to join in, too. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Barbara in Madison is next. Barb, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call. You know, this has been weighing on my mind heavily since I read the article in last weekend's Capital Times by a columnist from Milwaukee who was telling about the dropout rate there and how severe it is. Yeah, like 50% of ninth graders. And I thought, it's been on my mind so much. Could they have a school within a school where these people would not be expelled to be out on the street causing more problems and no supervision, and where the discipline would be and different measures used, and then they wouldn't be causing the disruption to people who want to learn in the classroom? And then another thing I wanted to ask you was, I recall having a boot camp in Wisconsin. Is that no longer part of the whole scenario, a boot camp where young people are gone, where it's almost a militaristic sort of environment, and they're really, the rate was pretty successful, I thought.
All right, thanks for calling, Barb. Comments,
well,
Ken?
Going backward, if Larry and I were on our fourth and fifth lineys, we would all be thinking that the boot camp is a good idea for youth. It turns out that the boot camp, which had much emotional support among people like my dad, who was in World War II and things like that, and it had a common purpose, and you all recognize that it was to strip your individuality, turns out to be a terrible idea as far as juveniles go. The main problem was targeting who you were going to have in the boot camp and how you were going to do the aftercare programming. And so I am not an opponent of putting people into secure custody, but I will tell you that for the most part, if you're putting somebody in secure custody and you don't have a well-funded reintegration program that lasts at least 18 months, you're wasting your money, because it's not what you – I mean, it's important to do a whole bunch of things in the facility, but if you don't have that transition follow-up to teach the person how to do that back in the community – pretty much they just sort of evaporate. And they don't have a common purpose, and you don't have somebody shouting at them in the morning and all that kind of stuff. So while it had sort of a common sense kind of thing, it's, again, one of those things that when you actually looked at it, what was happening is judges didn't want to use the boot camp for kids who were currently going into regular corrections, so they reached down a little bit lower, pulled in some kids who were not really ready to go into corrections, but said, let's try this boot camp thing. For a variety of reasons, the recidivism was so unacceptable that they got rid of the program in Wisconsin.
So that took care of the boot camp. What about the school? Now, Barb brought up the issue of kind of a school. The dropout rate in Milwaukee is somewhere around 50%.
Mm-hmm.
What's your comment to that?
Schools, are always going to be critical components of having a kid who has come into juvenile court not recidivating. And it's like you and I, from a one perspective, it's like you and I. If we go to work during the day, that's 8 hours during the day plus getting up and shaving and all
getting
that kind
ready.
Of stuff. So it's really 10 hours out of 16 hours that you can't be goofing around.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
yeah.
And so for... Not to say that that's the school's role is to babysit, but if the kid's not there, you have to figure out another place for them to be located. Now, in some cases, what some counties have done is to basically pair up what they call a day treatment program. And so it's a hybrid of a social services program along with the local school. And they try not to have it that you go there too quickly because they don't really want to have the kids who are marginal being pulled out of the regular school,
right.
Partly because of cost, partly because, just like we said at the opening of the hour, you could have a backlash problem that you're bringing in kids with a tougher group of kids. But frankly, that costs money. And so while I'm aware of different counties in the state that do that, and I know that there are some programs in Milwaukee where they do that, all in all, the total number of kids that they can afford to put into that program right now is not very much compared to probably the number of kids who
could
would benefit
it.
From the program.
Yeah. All right. Barbara, thank you again. I want to get some others a chance to get on here. Rich in Nakusa, we'll go to you next. Hi, Rich.
Hi there. Just my comment here in listening to this morning is that the prison system itself, I think, is the wrong situation in dealing with both juveniles and adults because they're not a prison system, they're a hotel system. These people that are in there, they've got it made. And this is part of the biggest part of the problem that I see in the prison system.
Well, what do you think of that, Ken?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we're not Wisconsin's... How do I put this? There are some states where the prison system is so underfunded that it's downright dangerous. Hmm. You know, you don't even get me going on California and Texas and places like that. This I've been observing the prison system in Wisconsin for about 25 years, and this is about the starkest you can get in having it be safe. And by being safe, I mean, if you don't have a staffing pattern where inmates feel safe, inmates will then decide that they have to take it into their own hands to protect their safety. And that not only jeopardizes other inmates, but it also jeopardizes staff. So you don't really want to go there. In order to deal with the huge expansion of Wisconsin. And Wisconsin's rate of jail and prison incarceration, if you look at all the Midwest states, so think about the Big Ten states, and then go east to the Atlantic coast, so Pennsylvania, New York, and all that, we are the highest combined jail and prison per 100,000 out of all those states. So we come in sort of in the middle if you look at the national average, but unless you want to start saying we should be compared with Texas and Florida and California and Mississippi and stuff like that, those are the ones that drive the numbers way up. So it's sort of a thing of Wisconsin likes to incarcerate people a whole lot. And I would agree with you that I'm not sure that longer incarceration necessarily gets better impact. As far as doing things during the day that make life more difficult for inmates, I'm not sure what you would suggest. I think, you know, Wisconsin is going to comply with ACA standards as far as having a nutritious meal. I've eaten those meals, and they are not pleasant meals, but they meet all the different calorie requirements as far as having air circulation and things like that. So if that's your idea of a hotel, yeah, they're in a hotel.
But what just to follow up on that a little bit, what kinds of education, what kinds of benefits along that line do the jails provide in Wisconsin that would help the person once they get out to actually get, you know, find employment?
Okay, jails are something run by the county. And they might provide some kind of programmatic resource, but for the most part, they're not obligated to. They are simply a custody situation, pre-adjudication custody. Sometimes you go for 6 months or a year as a condition of probation or something like that. But they're not expected to deliver any programs. It's the state prison system that's expected to deliver the programs. But in order to pay for the growth in prisons, and to give you an example, from the time when they moved the mid-1990s, the juvenile population, even accounting for taking the 17-year-olds out, has been relatively stable. It's actually gone down, but if you were to add the 17-year-olds in, it would go up a little bit. The adult population is gone up by 2.5-fold during that period of time. Without Wisconsin having any more crime than before. So the prison population, in order to afford all those inmates, sort of had to take out treatment programming. So now, instead of having treatment programming for the full duration that the person's in, for the most part, they only get treatment programming at the very end. They'll get whatever education programs they need at the beginning, because we want the person to be able to read for their whole 10 years of confinement. But the AODA, alcohol and drug treatment program, the sex offender program, and all that stuff, all you sort of just have to put in your time until you get to the end of your sentence. Oh. So it's a very non-involving thing. You're just doing time.
Yeah. Well, what just to talk about now the 17-year-olds, is there any plan? Do you think that this is going to change at all of the that the 17-year-olds will have a chance to go into someplace other than adult court, go into juvenile court?
Well, I know there's efforts in the legislature to try to move it back to the 18th birthday. And to give you an example, Wisconsin's one of the only 12 states that doesn't have 18th birthday. So we're in the minority with it. Illinois has it lower. Michigan has it lower. New York has it lower. But the vast majority of places have 18th birthday. They are going to have to get back into the issue of where are they going to get the money to provide to the counties, because what we've done is we say that the juvenile correctional funding or programs are delivered by the counties. And so to move back that population of 17-year-olds back to the county without any money basically means you're going to have to cut all your other services. That's not going to be popular. No. But you'd have to probably come up with about $25 to $30 million
a year
to move it back over there. Now, I think that, as the agent from Bristol said, we would get a whole lot more. I mean, if you're talking about holding 17-year-olds accountable, we would get lots more by moving them back to the juvenile system. And since you still would have the opportunity for the judicial waivers of kids who are really committing serious offenses or have worn out their welcome, you wouldn't be losing anything for that population.
Ken, it's always a pleasure. I hope we can have you back a little more quickly next time to talk about this. Callers online, we didn't get to all of them, but I appreciate you being with us. Thank you.
Thanks.
Ken Strait, UW-Madison Law School Clinical Associate Professor, our guest here on the Ideas Net. Stay with us.